and Everyone We Know has a podcast, and I'm your host, Ben. We are coming back for week two of this. Thanks to everybody for listening to the first episode. I got a lot of good feedback about it. We'll talk about that next week. But this week, I sat down with my dear, dear friend, James Shotwell. He runs a podcast called Inside Music. You can find that, you know, anywhere you listen to podcasts. He is a published writer in the world of television and movies and music. He's a great dude. We had a podcast together for a little while called Not Quite, which didn't quite work out because of my brain. But if you're familiar with that, then you'd be familiar with how these conversations will go. So this is James Shotwell. Enjoy.
All right.
Nice.
We're good to go.
Awesome. How's your day going?
It's fine. I got up at the crack of dawn and made B breakfast and then took the dog out, took her to class, and I just finished watching the Soska sisters remake of David Cronenberg's Rabid.
Okay. Why were you up at the crack of dawn?
Her yoga class is at 9. And it's like a 15-minute drive, so I have to get up first, wake her up, make breakfast, get her to eat breakfast, and then get her to class. I usually drive her.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That all makes sense.
I like to think so.
Yeah. How what's the rest of your day looking like? What do you got going on later today?
The rest of today, I have pick her up from class. That's a good start. And
okay.
We're going to go to the community gardens and see some, it's just nice cause it's so cold here. So we have a gardens membership cause it's warm. They have like a, you know, rainforesty climate and, we'll go there for a little bit. And then I have to do her yoga class again today so that she can get teaching hours. And, that'll probably eat up most of the day. Got to go grocery shopping for this new plan we're on.
Yeah. What's exactly that plan? Just eating at home?
So like I watch a lot of YouTube videos and my recommendation recently showed me this video from this guy that, did like 12 challenges, one every month last year. And it was like a review of all those challenges. And one of them was that he ate in every single day. And we just really like that idea because we are trying to save money and pay off some debts and maybe save to get a house someday. So mostly the debts first and foremost, but just saving money.
You guys both went to college?
No, she did not go to college, but she did travel the world. She doesn't really have as much debt as I do, but her car, like, her car is nicer than mine, so she owes like as much on just her car as I owe between like my car and my credit card. So together, we've got like plus. I don't even count my student loans because they're so ridiculous. So like,
it's like a thing that's gonna be. It's not even a debt. It's like cost to be alive.
Yeah,
in a weird way, it's so, like you pay a tax to be in society.
Mm-hmm.
These days, it's generally in the $50,000 to $100,000. Dollar range.
Yeah, it's not that much for me, thankfully. So between like her car and my car and my credit card debt, which is mostly like I used to have a record label kind of debt, is
it's
about $20,000 combined, and then I owe like $30,000 of my loans. So it's like $50,000 all in. But I don't like to think about that, so I just say $20,000, two times of 10.
Yeah, all good.
We'll get there.
Yeah, I mean when everyone left the band in 2011, like we had, I think like close to 10 grand in debt, like at that moment. Because like, you know, we were playing for 1,000 people a night and like we're being paid $75 a night. so it didn't even cover the gas at that age to be there. There was a lot of like, all right, we'll get to it. It takes time to tend to, but I think a lot of people sort of they can get like worked up about debt and be like, all right, how am I gonna live? It's like, well, you're gonna be here every you know, you're going to be here every day anyway. You know, like what do you think you're going to be able to do that you can't do? Like, to one extent, there are limitations, absolutely. But it's not like you get out of debt and suddenly you're like, yeah, I can buy an RV now and fucking travel the world and I don't have to work anymore. Like, you're still going to have to go to work.
Exactly. My thing is like, the way I always say it to B is like, I honestly never, she obsesses over money. I almost never think about it. It just does not weigh on me because of that, what you just said. I'm always like, I can get on Instagram and there's a girl I went to high school with that has four kids that is fine. And so I'm like, well, us with our two cats and a dog, we ain't got nothing to worry about. Like, that girl didn't go to college. She has four kids. She like is like survives on her own and takes them on vacations and they go to Disney World and do all this stuff. And I'm like, if she's fine, we'll figure it out. I don't stress.
Yeah. And I mean, aside from that, like, you know, like from my experience, like I used to worry a lot more about money, and that's because like I was very aware of how poor we were growing up. Like, my mom was able to provide, and you know, we were never like, we were never homeless. Like, this is like a, you know, it's the most privileged version of being broke. It's white broke, like in a, you know, like in that still there, still eating, but generally a lot more Little Debbie than is probably ideal for a 7-year-old.
yeah, totally. And B comes from that, especially more so than I do. But like, I grew up in a trailer for the most part, and even now, like, B's gluten-free, and because of her autoimmune, has all these other things that we don't eat and stuff. So my parents have adjusted to it. But if we go back to my parents' house, it is definitely, they still just eat that way, even though they're much better off now. But like, that's just how they are as people and stuff. And
yeah, it's habit. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you develop your taste buds at a certain age, and you stay there. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know you grew up in a trailer. Like, what? Like, talk to me about that. Like, what was? Let's dig back into childhood, James.
I don't have the cool trauma stories that you and B have. I just
there are big T's and little T's.
Yeah, I got a lot of little T's.
Stack up.
We were in a trailer. My first memory is like, I think, you know, like, it's weird. The older you get, the more like you don't know if it's your first memory because they all just start to like mesh together. But my earliest memory that I can ever think of is being in this trailer watching Ernest Saves Christmas. And that's the whole memory. But I remember living in the trailer, and then we lived in a duplex in apartments, and we just kind of like worked our way up. We literally lived in like one of everything. But childhood started in a trailer.
Okay. Nice. So like, what, you know, I guess in as far as like moving up, like, what was, did you move around a lot then, like as far as like school district to school district, or was that pretty consistent?
By the time I got to school, we moved all around a certain county. So like, I stayed in the same school, but we moved to like from little towns and stuff in the same area.
Yeah.
So we moved a lot. Like, by the time we moved to Michigan when I was 9 from Ohio, we had moved, I think, 9 times or like 7 times by then. So I was used to moving like every year or so, and that was just life. And then we moved to Michigan, and my parents still live in the house that they moved into when we moved to Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not in any way sort of unlike my upbringing until like I went to Hawaii, which sounds very
sounds very much nice. Cooler than it is.
Yeah, than it turned out. But yeah, like all that moving around, like, how do you think that had any sort of effect on you, that overly mobile youth, early youth?
Well, I have spent the last, I don't know, 12 years moving all over, but also like, it's really hard for me to be happy just being home, like any day of the week. So it's like, it's on a small scale. It's like, it's really hard. Like, if I have a day off, the last thing I want to do is sit at home all day. Like, I'm like, let's go on an adventure. Let's do something.
Yeah.
And, B, who has also traveled the world and moved around a lot as a child, it's funny, her stuff manifests itself in the opposite. Like, if she has a day off, her idea of a day off is like, I'm going to sit on the floor and watch Golden Girls and don't talk to me. And if I want to take a nap, I'll take a nap. And like, if I can do that for 12 hours, I'll be happy. And I'm like, I will go insane.
That's a good, I mean, that's a good day, depending on your, you know, your predilections. Yeah. Is that the word I'm thinking of?
It's me, that sounds like a nightmare. So I like to get out, like, even if it's just go to the movies. I think it's why I love the cinema, because it's like cheap. We always did it when I was growing up. That was like the constant. Yeah. And now it's like, well, I'll leave the house for 2 hours. Even if I'm just sitting on the couch looking at the TV to go sit on a chair and look at a bigger TV, in my brain it's like, well, we went somewhere. We did something. We're moving around.
That's what I was about to ask. I was like, you're kind of just sitting in a different room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when we used to, in touring, you know, we would spend 8 hours driving to a place, obviously seated that whole time, or laying down, and we'd get like, you get out of the van, walk into the venue, like you find the green room and you sit down. And then for some reason, we're all like, ah, feels good to sit, like, but in a different chair.
Yes, exactly. That is, I sometimes I do catch myself sitting at home all day and then going to the movies and halfway through the movie being like, I'm still doing the same thing. It's just a bigger screen. sometimes it's more comfortable.
It's a different experience.
I don't know. Yeah. But it makes all the difference to me mentally. Like, to me, that's enough. But I do like to just like do stuff. Like, going to the gardens today is 100% my idea, because I'm like, you're going to go yoga class for 6 hours, and when you get out, you're not going to want to do anything, which I get. If I did yoga for 6 hours, I wouldn't want to do anything else. But I need this, or else I'm going to sit at home all night and just like pester you. Cause like, it's not even that I'll tell her to do stuff. I'm just like, I don't know what to do with my energy. I'm just like, let's.
Yeah. You need to move. And that's not a bad thing. Like, you know, how do you find that just going for a walk helps, or does that not feel quite like checklisty enough for you? Like, I accomplished something today.
No, depends on like, if it's funny, like when I'm traveling and I'm in like New York or LA, then yes, going on a walk like makes me feel like I've accomplished something. But in the Midwest, it just doesn't. Maybe it's because we grew up in cars. Like, in the cities, people get on subways or they walk around. But out here, it was always like, you got in the car with your dumb friends and you just drove around and listened to music for an hour. And to me, that's more interesting. Or just like, it accomplishes more in the brain, even though it's not any different necessarily.
Well, you're interacting with people, you know, that's different than being on a walk by yourself. So is it strangely enough, like you want a very specific dose of non-isolation.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want to go to the movies with anybody. It doesn't matter necessarily to you. Would I be correct about that?
Depends on the day, but yeah, usually.
Depends on the day, yeah. You know, so it's like you want to be near people but not obligated to them?
In some sense, yes. But I don't want to be obligated to them, but I would like their attention.
There you go.
I always really just like being an only child. Like, I was just working on just doing some, like, one of my New Year's resolutions is just to try to write every day. So when I don't have something like a project for work or for some side thing, I just like try to write my own stories out. And I was working on something about my childhood the other day, and I was like, I always was home alone from like 10 till whenever my parents got off work, but from age 10 up.
Yeah.
And so, like, most afternoons I would just sit in the house with the music on really loud and play video games by myself all the time. And I like having people around, because I think I was lonely a lot, but I'm in a way where I'm like, I just want your attention. Like, it's funny because, like, B will sometimes say to me when we're sitting around, I'll be like, we should do something. And she'll be like, we are doing something. Like, we are.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'll be trying to talk to her about, like, doing, I'll be like, no, but we should do something, like, as a couple. And she's like, bro, we live together. We've been here all day. We like woke
this
up together. Yeah. No, literally she'll say that. What she says to me all the time is like, we're living the dream that you have. Like, what you say you want is like what we're doing right now. So can't this just be that? And I was like,
yeah,
I mean, I guess, but then my brain is like, but what are we going to do next, dude?
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the notion of like, you know, we feel like we need to accomplish something like all the time. Does that make sense? Like, you know, this is it, sort of the idea, you know, when we're like, what is, you know, yeah, like, what is life? It's like, life is just often, like, you know, that whole, like, your idea, the idea you have, the dream you have, or when she says, like, this dream you have, like, this is it. This is the destination. You've arrived. You know, you no longer, you know, it's sort of like old scripts of feeling like you need to be doing something rather than just being something. I once read, like, that Lance Armstrong book, that short fiction he wrote a while ago, back when, before the drug news came out. He was like, I'm not a human being, I'm a human doing. And I thought it was one of the douchiest, or like one of the most misguided self-proclamations. It's like, yeah, I guess it's okay to feel that way at times, but, you know, at the end of the day, we just kind of, we're an isness, you know what I mean?
No, I totally hear you. And that's something that I am highly working on recently. And
what are you doing to work on that?
Well, just trying to be okay with being present. And another thing that I've been trying to do is, like, one of my, like, something, a habit that I have is that I always have headphones on or in. Like, it's just like, I like my world. Like, this is a good example of, like, I want your attention, but I don't necessarily want an obligation to you. So, like, if I'm doing something in the kitchen, I'm making dinner, Bee's on the couch or whatever, I like having her around. We're in the same space. It's nice. But I'll wear my headphones to, like, listen to a podcast or music while she watches Golden Girls or does whatever she's doing. But even, like, taking the dog out, I got to, like, throw headphones on just to, like, spend 30 more seconds listening to Pete Holmes or Neil Brennan talk in my ear for, like, that span of time. So I've been working really hard on, like, not having my headphones on, like, just being more present in the moment, because, like, I realize that, like, I'm constantly, like, I need, like, just going outside isn't enough. I also need someone, like, talk, like, two people to be talking in my ear the whole time, even though I'm, like, I already have the, like, I just need more and more, what would you say, like, something else demanding
stimulation.
More stimulations. So I've been trying to take them out and be more present with, like, one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be a person or, like, reading or just sitting with myself and just being like, okay, just the quiet is not a monster.
Yeah. Well, our aversion to quiet, you know, in my view, it kind of comes from a couple different things. One, that we've essentially almost lost that entire notion as a culture now. Just we always need something. It's so accessible that it becomes the default, you know, or, you know, sort of the reality is that the absence of something is the bigger reality, sort of the space between, there's more space between our, like, molecules than there is us. We're more nothing than we are something. And, like, there's more, you know, in the natural world, you know, there's more silence than there is noise for many reasons. One, silence is generally, or, like, noise, you know, with animals, it gives away your position or is intentional. There's a reason you're making a noise. You're not just mindlessly chattering, if that makes sense. And then, like, you know, if there's an, like, large noise in the natural world, it's because, like, shit is going down. Like, it's a bad thing. Like, a tree is falling, or, you know, what, you know, things of that nature. But yeah, we've gotten so unaccustomed to it that it's unnerving.
It really sucks. I've never been a fan of silence. I'm trying to adjust to it more, or just quiet. I put on, like, I always make the joke of lo-fi beats, but, like, that's kind of, like, my slow easing into it. It's just, like, lo-fi beats that quietly sit in the background. You know what I mean? That is, like, keeping me company while I write. I don't know about you. I can't write in silence, especially if I'm trying to write about music or film. I need to have that noise, even if it's not the thing I'm writing about. Like, if I wanted to write about you, I can't, like, listen to your music at the same time. But I need something, some, like, melody to write to.
Yeah. I find that's interesting because, I mean, so you're, you know, I want to talk about sort of writing as an idea in general for you, and sort of how that came to be a thing that you do or enjoy. But just that idea, that's interesting. Like, I like that because, you know, you're not writing in a rhythm. I know there's a rhythm to just writing in general, but there's not, like, a poetic bounce to writing paragraphs, if that makes sense.
There is not.
Whereas, Whereas, like, if I were to start listening, if I were to listen to something while writing, you know, lyrics or other music, like it would in like I'd instantly be like, all right, the melody's like goes along with this beat, like, and this and you know. Whereas I know that the singer from Every Time I Die, he's said in the past that he can't write without listening to Radiohead. Like he writes lyrics just while listening to Radiohead, and I thought that was really weird, because that's like superfluous information that you then have to like filter out to be like, all right, what's the, because it's a, you know, it's an entirely, it's not that it's a less melodic, like they have less, like hardcore has less sort of restrictions and like rhythm, if that makes sense. Like you can sort of drift away from that stuff. So your lyrics can be more just lyrics, are not beholden to necessarily bounces and syntax and diction, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But I found that really, it's, yeah, it's interesting how rhythms come into our lives, whether or not we want it to. But like, how'd you start writing?
I was actually, this is what I was writing about the other day, when I was just trying to put my thoughts together. I always put it as like the only two things that I ever like really, really care about are music and writing. And I figured out pretty early on that like making music wasn't my forte. I can do it. I have the ability to play guitar, and I can arguably sing, in the idea that like anyone can arguably sing. But it just wasn't like, the thing was with writing, and it's more specifically talking first and foremost, was I just liked being on stage in front of people. Like, I know your other half, better half in some arguments, likes to be on
Most
stage.
arguments.
Most arguments, yes.
Most arguments.
Likes to be on stage and likes to get out there. And like, I always loved theater, and I did a lot of theater. But then when I figured out like you could do monologues in like high school theater, I would do monologues in competitions, and I liked that. And then I don't know, I took an interest in writing, and it was the first thing that like I was better than anyone I knew at doing. And it wasn't even like good writing necessarily, as much as I just liked wordplay and like big words. So it wouldn't be like the brown cat ran down the street. It would be like the brown, you know, I can't even think of a good sentence now. The musty brown cat ran briskly. Just like more descriptive words, basically. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I
So were you?
liked doing that, and people liked it. And then I got into doing monologues in theater, and then so then at some point, I was in a speaking competitions in high school, and as I would have to write more and more stuff, people would always just be like, "You write like you talk," and I didn't understand that that wasn't a compliment all the time, like that there was a different way to write than to speak, and I still don't get it. So then at some point I was like, "Well, I want to talk all the time," and I couldn't figure out, like, this is obviously, you know, because we're almost the same age, so this was before like TED Talks and YouTube and all that. So it was just like, well, if I can't figure out a way to get on stage or in front of people talking to them, because I don't have like, I live in the middle of nowhere and we don't have comedy clubs or anything, I just realized like I could write in my voice, and if people like it, then maybe eventually I can get in front of them and talk to them, and they'll just be like, oh, it's that guy that I like because he does that thing that I enjoy.
So it's interesting. So writing like you talk is not a compliment.
No, I've learned over the years that it is not intended as a compliment. It is intended
Why
because it's like
is it
not
not a why is
proper.
it not a compliment?
Yeah, because I mean, it's only a compliment if you speak like if you speak real if you're well spoken. So like, if you're, you know, a Martin Luther King or a John F. Kennedy or someone like that, you talk like you write like you talk. It's endearing. But if I'm Larry the Cable Guy and I write like I talk, it's maybe he doesn't come across as a compliment. You know what I mean? So what I learned is that my English teachers were trying to be like, you don't understand composition necessarily, but you understand engaging writing, and like we'll give you a pass because it's entertaining. And in a very Kevin Smith type way, I was like, well, I'm just looking for the pass. I'm not looking for the accolades. So I just kind of stuck with it. And now it's like, it's weird because even in the context of my relationship, B will meet people and start talking to them, and they'll be like, what does James do? And she'll be like, I don't know. He makes things. Like, that's what, like, she'll be like, people seem to like what he does, whatever that is, and it's nice.
Yeah, it's always it's a very nebulous description. Like, it's always just anytime you're like creating, so, like anytime you're a creative person, it's like, all right, so you like to communicate. Essentially, you like, you know, in a way, I think you just generally, the abstract is like, I like to communicate. I like the art of communication in a way.
I like the art of communication and storytelling, basically.
Yeah. So it's like how, then there's like the ancillary. So like, all right, I write, you know, and then I also like, I speak about the, you know, sort of all that stuff. And it's like, you get, you know, you just sort of dig around and how you can help like continue to do that. It's kind of like in music, like, you know, I like to make music, but I'm also up for like helping other people like make their best music, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's related. It's almost a positive version of that Mitch Hedberg joke about, you know, he went to Hollywood and like people saw him do stand up and they were like, I love it. Like, do you write? And he was like, that'd be like, ask, like go in a restaurant and go into the chef and be like, I love your cooking. Do you farm?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, but they're connected enough in a way.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. The older I get, the more I was like, I think like if I had known how stand-up comedy worked the way you and I talk about it now, like if I'd known that when I was 18, 19, I might not have started writing about music as a blogger. I might have done it still as a hobby, but I probably would have tried to do stand-up if only because like now all of my idols, well, even back then, like if you were to ask me like who my favorite writers were, it was Abbie Hoffman and then it was always George Carlin. And now that I get older, I'm always like, oh, my favorite, like all the people I look up to and I'm like, I want to imitate what they do. They're comedians, they're storytellers, but by and large, they're comedians. And I'm like, I just like doing that. Like that's all I want to do is like tell stories. And music was always the vehicle because to me, like all my stories were like the soundtrack to my life was this song. So I look at when I hear music, I'm always just like, this reminds me of this thing, or here's what this inspires or what it makes me think of. And that's kind of like how I did music writing from the start. Was I was just like, I want to tell people what I think about when I hear this songs. And I didn't realize that was criticism. And I still don't know that it is. It's more just like, here's what I think when I hear this thing.
Yeah, that's absolutely. So have you ever done like a, you know, were you writing these monologues or were you like taking them from things? You know what I mean?
Mostly I was pulling monologues that I found, but like independent monologues. And I always liked really dark stuff, just because I like the shock factor of it, you know, like I don't want to do, like I remember I did a monologue where I was a closeted homosexual coming out to his dad because he had been sexually assaulted while on a camping trip with his boyfriend and his boyfriend was murdered in front of him. And I was in high school.
That is dark.
So I'd go to like another high school and do this whole thing about watching my lover's throat get slit and then coming out to my dad. And my parents just never understood it really. They still don't. Like we have this weird wall where like they know what I do in a big picture idea, but we don't talk about things that are uncomfortable in the context of what I do. So like I recently wrote a piece called I Don't Know If God Exists, So I'm Going to Worship Sleep Token Instead, this band I like. Really clickbaity headline, but also kind of true. But it's one of those things where like I know my parents see it, but we'll never discuss it. But I know that deep down they're like, it's just not for us.
Yeah. It's very... I think generationally, there's this idea that, you know, would it be fair to say that there's this idea that like you're supposed to do all that exploring in private, and then you're like, it in the public eye you're supposed to be this finished product.
Yes,
if that makes sense, and like you know keep your figuring it out to yourself.
Yeah, and I obsess over the figuring it out. Yeah.
Yeah, and because in all like, you know, that's, I guess that's a, I wonder about sort of that Muji quote of like the, you know, we've talked about the idea of like the ego will always choose the journey over the destination. And I wonder if, but on the same note, you know, on another side of the coin, like the process is the point of like sort of, you know, like there is no destination. Like that's that whole thing's an illusion. Like the destination is like the recycling of our molecules into the dirt and back into the cosmos. But I do wonder, like, how, you know, if these, like, if this generation and the next are sort of like starting to come back to that, like, the process is the point, you know, in a way, sort of through just sort of increasing income inequality, less opportunity and mobility, like less chance of getting ever being out of debt, if that makes sense. Like, if you're a college student or somebody that decided to buy a Dodge Charger when you were 19 or like, or whatever the thing is. So all these systematic things have taken away the notion that we're ever going to arrive, if that makes sense. So we've now been forced to appreciate the process of life.
Yeah. I always think of, there's a Thoreau quote that's like, I've climbed several higher mountains without guide or path, and I found, as might be expected, that it only takes more time and patience than to travel the smoothest highway. And yeah. I always like that, because I'm like, yeah, that's why I want to get into the nitty gritty of it. And that's something that also can drive Bea crazy, because she's very much about being present and in the moment, and her thoughts are always, she's really dedicated to, like, here's where I'm at right this second, and that's all I need to be. And my brain is like, is always writing the story. And so it's always just like, no. We are just in the midst of the chapter right now. Hold on. There's like, I need to know. Yeah, what's like,
you are correct. You know, so, but you know, that comes, you know, we're talking about yoga earlier. They mentioned that, and so that notion of the balance of ease and effort, you know, like you're writing a story. You're sort of writing a story in a way, but you know, you're also just, you can only ever be on this page, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense to me. Ask me another question. You know, I'm here for your show.
What's that? Oh, like, yeah, no, I'm always, you know, I don't know what I'm doing.
I like it.
As far as, like, you know, you said that writing, like, you talk is a bad thing. I always thought it was just a good, like, if you're good at expressing your voice, you know what I mean? Because again, like, talking like you write is sort of the opposite of finding your voice in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I've grown to think that it's
put on and very reverent, you know, like a speech is a reverent thing. It's not necessarily an authentic thing.
Yeah. Well, in hindsight, I think it is a bonus. There are just moments where maybe it's not, like, I think it's a good thing now. It's almost like one of those interactions that you have with another person that you don't realize until much later they intended something very differently than, like, how you took it. Because even when the teachers would tell me that, I would think, oh, I'm in the wrong, because I'm not, like, I didn't take it as a I took it as a compliment the first time they said it to me. But it wasn't until I was older and I would talk to, like, I would see them, or they would reach out to me about stuff I had written, or they'd see I got published somewhere and we'd talk about it. And yeah. then it'd be like, oh, you didn't mean it as a compliment when you said it. Now it is a compliment more because their job is to teach me how to do it, like, a proper way, and I'm not doing it that way. But that doesn't mean that it's bad in, like, the big picture of things. Like, I remember in college, I almost got kicked out of college at one point because I was in an advertising class where all you had to do was, like, just learning to write ads. And I have the inability to just do what's on the page. And so I would always try to, like, make something funny or have fun with whatever we were doing, because, like, no one's going to hear these ads. So, like, why not make them entertaining for, like, the six people in the class? So I remember at one point I did, we had to do advertisements for funeral homes, and I wrote one about a funeral home that was having a NASCAR themed sale on urns. So you can get, like, the Dale Earnhardt. Yeah. Dale Earnhardt is literally all it started with. And then it was like Jeff Gord done and gone and stuff like that. And just, like, it was like a really silly ad, like how you used to, like how you think of, like, a used car ad where it's like, come on down to Big Bob's wacky whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so I did that ad for the class, and, like, she wanted to get me kicked out of college for all sorts of things because she was like, he's just disrespectful and he doesn't do the work and he doesn't always show up for class. And I had to like have the head of my program, music business, had to like come over and literally brought magazines that had like my published work in them and been like, listen, he's already doing the thing you're trying to teach him how to do.
Just
his problem isn't that he doesn't know how to do it. It's that this just doesn't challenge him. So he's like doing this. And every time I go back to that college now to speak, I'll always like drop off anything I've done recently because I'm kind of petty like that. But I remember like, it's just this friction of like their job. It's almost like a Bart Simpson mentality where it's like, I know what their job is to do and I could easily do that thing. But instead I'm like, no, I've got to have tension without having the obligation of like, well, I know what you want me to do, but I just want you to see me do my thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I get when I was in high school, like my main track, was, sort of like careers in like radio and television. Like I had my own TV show. Do you ever like look back at sort of high school or like your upbringing or your like academics and sort of not realize how dialed, like I kind of deny the notion that like this was like being a singer or singing in a band was ever something I wanted to do. But like looking back at high school, like I hosted I was the host of every variety show we did. So like I was on stage in front of 300 to 500 people twice a year. I had my own like local access TV show, you know, and I have this but I tell myself like, this isn't something I ever wanted. Like I didn't want that. Has that ever occurred to you? Like, and sort of looking back, like, yeah, this is exactly what I unconsciously sort of set up myself to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I spin it through this lens where my grandfather was a pastor. So I grew up in a church watching him speak every Sunday. And then when I got into music, like I booked shows and promoted shows and like did all the behind the scenes work before I ever started playing music. And then I ended up kind of going back to being in behind the scenes work. And the whole time I was never like, what I really like doing, like what I was doing in every one of these instances was always like just expressing myself. Even when I was booking shows, it was more like, it's like making a mixtape, right? You're like, here's a collection of things I like that I want you to see.
These are bands I vouch for.
Yeah.
That's what always bummed me. I did the same thing when I was in like high school, but I always wonder how promoters of venues, it just seems soul crushing of like having to book 85% of the shows that like you just want nothing to do with. Yeah. And it's like, I just got to do this to make ends meet. It's sort of like it must be impossible as a promoter to find that balance of promoting shows you like and just promoting shows you like are doing because it's the paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're what you get out of it. You have to be obsessed with like putting on a good show or the returns more than the talent you bring through. And I think that's one of the things that's dissuaded me from various things. Even having a record label was very much a variation of like, here are things that I back. Here are things that I like so much I went into debt to make available to you. And then whether or not people buy them comes not only as an insult to your finances, but as an insult to your taste. You're just like, why do I have 100 copies of this left over? When everyone should know that it's the greatest thing in the world. And one time I remember talking to Jamie Coletta about a band that I really liked. And I was like, I think that this band could do something. Do you think we should put out their music? And she just told me, if you work it as hard as you possibly can, it can be anything you want it to be. And I believe that that is true in certain circumstances, but I don't necessarily think that's true in music because I've learned time and time again that everything has its limit. You know what I mean? Like there are just some bands that can only be so big. It's just, not everyone can fill an arena and you got to like find a different kind of satisfaction. So nowadays,
I know it.
Yeah. Nowadays my satisfaction comes from getting into talking about the things I like, B, talking to people about what they're passionate about, because I get a lot of instant gratification from like speaking at conferences or at colleges or YouTube comments, usually mostly positive. All of those things make me feel good. And then like you and I working together now is like a weird full circle moment of like I went from ordering a CDR from you off Pure Volume to now I don't know a major. I don't know a major life event that doesn't involve you in the recent history or in the foreseeable future. And it's just like, oh, now we're just interlinked.
Man, life is so interesting. It's so cool. Yeah. I have a really hard time not zooming out and sort of being like, especially in the last couple months, I've always sort of had that bent, sort of the existential bent, but there used to be, up until the concussion and like a couple months into the post-concussion, like way more dread about it. And now it's just like, this is so cool that this, any of it. Like, I'm just constantly like, I can look up at trees and I'm like, this is why, it feels a little trippy all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm in my groove when I have that kind of feeling. Sometimes there's no greater storyteller than existence itself in many ways. So sometimes there are like these instances in life where it's funny, especially the older you get, especially I think in your 30s, cause you've made it on the other side of like these crazy 20s. And now there are things that happened 5, 10, 15 years ago that now something happens in your life and you're like, I can't believe that this seed planted back here is now sprouting at this point in my life. And it's like, I couldn't write that story or foresee that thing. And now it makes me want to write or tell better stories simply because I know that this is a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the, there was this, I was going to say about sort of, you said that, that in interacting with people and hearing about things that they're passionate about, gets you going and gets you excited. And I'm of a similar mind, like one of the more recent experiences of that. And just generally, like that's one of the reasons sort of I'm trying to do this on a regular basis. but my most recent example of this is like there's a race that happens every year in Lancaster City. It's like a 5 mile run, like through the city, like races that people do. It's like a 5 mile run. But I spent rather than running it myself, and probably because I had some kind of injury or I hadn't trained, yada, 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 so on and so forth. I spent the whole time just like cheering people on instead, like emphatically, at the start and then like in the last mile. And it's just a real, like rooting for people in a way gives me that same high as doing something myself. I was just kind of there and clapping people up, you got this, blah! Digging into all that stuff. And by the time the hour and a half that I'd spent doing it was up, like I was jacked up and like I could have accomplished anything in that hour or two after that. So I think there is something very valuable to that bounce back and forth. Like it's one of the reasons I have trouble writing alone, is because our existences and our unit, like the universe is so relational, that energy is only energy in relation to each other.
No, I totally get that. Yeah. I mean, I see that in you. So like when you pull off something or when we can like forge something together and then I see you like bring it to life, like now I have to do, it's the codependent relationship of our friendship. That's like, if you accomplish something, then I end up having, then I have to do something. Like it's, if you write a new song, and you send me a demo, then I'm like, all right, this is great. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, now here's all the things I have to do. And it inspires, and it keeps me going to get it done. And then when I get it done, then you're like, shit, now I have to do something. And it's,
it reminds you that you can do it when there are people around you that are doing stuff. It's all, it helps to be a reminder that you can also do a thing. It's the reason like I brought up fucking Landon in the sort of the first episode of this. Mm-hmm. Like it's, I was here. Here I am 13 years into a music career and I'm afraid to, I have this fear about starting a new thing or putting shit out there, or whatever. And like, it's just this random dude who had, I don't know much about him, but like it's like putting your first song out. It's a very like it's a bold step, you know. And I was, you know, just kind of like gut checked me. It's like, all right, shut up. You've been doing this for a while. Like, you know, just shut up. You got this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is
very.
Go ahead.
That's what community is about. Like sort of creative community, like reinforces itself when have people around you also doing stuff. You know, it becomes easier to create.
Absolutely. And, you know, Landon's a good example of also just like that saying, perspective, a lovely hand to hold, because like I've been recently, my fascination has been like, there used to be people in music that I would look up to and I would think, oh my gosh, I wish I could have their level of success or recognition. And now that we're all in our 30s for the most part, I realize, A, most of them are like a year or two older than me, five at most of the time. And a lot of them, at least the ones I like the most, I can usually text or reach out to in some way, and we talk like peers. And so like, kind of how like the sham of like what I thought they were, the level they were on, is really not that different than my own. They just get more recognition for what the things that they do sometimes, but it doesn't change who they are as people. And Landon, in my life, we've only been really close for like the last year, but he's a few years younger than me, and he gives me the sense that I am, in a weird way, and you to some extent, even though he doesn't know you as personally, are like that to him. Where like when I texted him the first episode, because you mentioned his song, which I had already sent to you, he was like, his brain exploded, and he was like, oh my god, I can't believe this, because he's been telling me, even before he knew that you and I were like working on stuff together, that we were kind of building stuff together, he would just talk to me about how much he liked your music. And when he put out that single the first day, a couple of people texted him and said he sounded like you, me, and everyone we know, and that like made his life. And like to him, that's like the hugest compliment. Like, it was just blowing his mind, and it was cool to see that, and like just in my small circle sense. And I was like, he doesn't realize it yet, but he's not that far removed from what he thinks he's looking up to. He's just more looking forward than looking up necessarily. He's like, yeah, oh, you can get there. And like, you're right, it also inspired me, because I've been trying to just chug out collections of A, things I've already written that are kind of public, like articles, and B, things I've written that I haven't really shared with people before. And I have that same nervousness you do, where I'm like, well, how do I make things? And then I see him at 26, about to be 27, chug out a song he's been working on for like 4 years, and to hear him tell it to you, he's just like, yeah man, I went into the studio and I recorded a song. And I'm like, what do you mean you just made a thing?
I mean, that was yeah, same thing with when the band started like doing stuff again. So, you know, just to sort of, I guess, break the timeline down, like, you know, you may know it, but we were supposed to play this show. And we were told we were on the show, and we were like, this will be a cool way to sort of crack back into things. And then the show, so like I got the website going, and I got the sort of mailing list kicking up, blah, 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 started, you know, making some noise on the internet again. And then the show fell through, and I was like, well, shit, I've already, like, the engine's going, if that makes sense. Like, all right, I got to start. It's like I agreed to start doing a job again. And I was like, shit, I guess I got to show up for work now.
Exactly. Like, now I have to do the work.
So like just haphazardly, it was just like, okay, you know, now that X amount of people have signed up for this mailing list, because I'm trying to sort of forge a path that doesn't rely on social media, because it's bad for our health, all as a civilization, you know, but so we just like two-taked that song, and I was just expecting it to be a little thing that like I could think of like 20 people that would be excited about it. I was like, yeah, maybe they'll care. Like, maybe they'll care a little bit. And it sort of, you know, rolled into this, like when people were like, yes, this is an acceptable first song, I'm happy to hear this. I was like, what? Like, you're okay with this level of production? Cause in my brain, like when we, you know, my, like, as far as like You, Me, and Everyone We Know songs go, I guess we really just call that songs I write, cause it's the only stuff I've ever done. It feels like it has to be this big production. Like my brain's like, all right, what I hear that song being when it's done has so many like layers and like interesting, cool little bells and whistles. You know, it to me, it feels more like a, like I'm designing a toy that, that has, you know, seven different sound effects and eight different uses. And you know what I mean? And I, like, I put out this like wooden gun and people were like, yeah, that's fine. And it like, I'm always like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like it can be that uncomplicated. Like this is enough.
Yeah.
So now like I'm trying to find that balance of like what's, you know, what's acceptable for me to like, what's acceptable for the band to release that's like without me like overthinking it. So like, what's the, like, I'm not looking to necessarily find like what's the lowest level of essentially production value, but where's the balance there in me feeling like it's going to take me, you know, I've spent 4 to 5 years writing one song at various points in times. Like Bootstraps on the full length took me 4.5 years to write. And it's like, is that, like, is that necessary? Like, fuck, like, is that necessary? Could I be more productive if I wasn't just, if I wasn't overthinking it so much or thinking it had to be more than it needs to be?
Yeah. I have
so
a,
that's where I am.
Yeah. I have a writer that I know who is younger than me, who in December just randomly announced like that they were putting out a book like the following weekend. That is kind of what I already talked about. A collection of things, mostly things that are published and some things they hadn't published before, just all thrown together in a book, put it out there into the world. And like, and I was like, you just, what do you mean? Like, how did they, like, there's a part of me that gets mad because I, there's a part of me that's like, how did you, how do you, who do you think you are? And there's another part of me that's like, oh, they are exactly who they need to be. They just chug it out there. I don't know why I can't get over those gymnastics in my brain. But I'm working on them and I'm going to get there. Let me ask you, I'm going to ask you a question on this idea.
This is a conversation, man.
Done. So I have my goals for 2020 and I've been like, I've promoted them online a lot. People can go out there and find them. And something that came to me recently is that most of my goals are tied to things that I'm already doing. So like pay off credit card debt, reading a certain number of books, you know, this, this other podcast that I've talked to you about that I haven't really told people about yet, working out, zines, writing, savings, all things that like I'm doing to some extent. Now I'm just trying to hit certain goals. What's one new thing that you want to do or try in 2020? Because I have been trying to figure one out today. I know what it is, but I think it's going to make you laugh when I say it. So I want to know first, what's your new thing you want to do this year?
Well, interesting enough, like this is one of them. Cause like it makes me really nervous to communicate with people in non-musical form. Like, you know, it's kind of like, I asked this question on the internet a couple weeks ago. I was like, how would you best describe like the band's vibe? And generally people are like, sounds real bright, reads real dark. Like, so in learning how to like have a conversation with people or like discuss these ideas, like just sort of like given an unmusical perspective or, you know, or communicate people like not like, you know, or talk to people in a musical sense or having the, I guess, confidence to do that. And that's, you know, that's one thing. Because like if I were to, you know, you can like in using colorful language as like a concept to sort of describe like analogies, it was like, all right, like, you know, basically, you know, I can talk about being an addict or an alcoholic or like deeply depressive or like working through my shit. But if I were to just be like, yeah, I have an addiction problem. I didn't really know I wanted to be alive fully until I was 35 years old. Like I'm still in debate about, you know, continued existence. Like that's shit that would get like, would put like a mental, like someone might be like, all right, we're going to put you on a 72-hour hold. And, you know, that's my concern because I spent a lot of time being gaslit as a crazy child. Well, specifically 1 year, but they did a good job of ingraining it into my psyche. But yeah, so, you know, sort of coming, yeah, just being, not relying so much on music to do that and exploring other ways of communicating with people. That's one thing. Another thing is, one thing that I've also started working on is just like sort of creating something like that's just for myself. That makes sense. That has no potential for monetization. You know, I'm reading one of the things I'm reading right now is a book called, or listening to, because I can't, I like still post concussion. I have like restrict, like I need to be careful about how much time I spend like looking at screens or reading. It's not nearly as bad as it was like 6 months ago or 9 months ago, but it's something I still notice. Like yesterday I got like a little fucked up and I was like, I can't like focus on shit right now. Just pay attention to it. So I started making these little, like I came across this little, and I'm showing it to you now via this video, these little like paper nano buildings. They sell these little kits. And you just need like a pair of tweezers, a little cutting board, and you make these cute little buildings or like little things. You can just look up paper nano crafts. And it's just like, you just glue them together and you can just kind of get lost in focusing on it. And it's nothing like, you know, cause my outlet for creativity now is like a business basically. Like I run a small, like the band is a business. So like if I make music, I'm putting it, like it eventually like comes out. Like if I finish a song, it's being released. That's why there's no B-sides for the band. So like that's a little thing I've been doing, and it feel like I've just finished the first one, and I'm almost on the first one. And it's just like a fun little thing to do that I'm just making for fun.
It's basically a ship in a bottle.
Yeah. It's in a way. Yeah, but not in a bottle and a lot easier.
Just yet. I can see in the future. You're like, look at this one.
Yeah.
I shoved it
in.
Yeah,
check it out. It's like 3 feet big. I did get a 3D puzzle for Christmas. Yeah, I sort of digging back into that stuff, like actively, like active meditation stuff. So stuff that is like, you know, you can let your mind wander while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And is sort of small. Yes. Yeah, so I'm doing like that. I'm doing so. Like, what's your thing?
Hip-hop,
that your new thing?
Hip hop dance classes.
Dude, can I fucking tell you? Oh my god! I have this strangely shameful desire to be like an all right dancer.
Yes.
Like I can side to sidestep. Mm-hmm. But the other day, oh man, this you're speaking to my soul right now. I have this like very insecure desire to be vaguely, because like you and I both like have an appreciation for hip hop. Like it's the first, I grew up listening to Bob Seger and like soul music and like oldies stuff. So I've always appreciated sort of that end of like swing shit. But like hip hop and R&B was like was one of the things that helped me survive Hawaii, like in a big way. But it's, you know, I grew up going to school with people that were into that, were into hip hop and R&B. It's always been a part of me, and sort of that rhythm of that rhythm in life. But yeah, I've always been like I'm not trying to be like. I will spend a good amount of time watching "Bitch Better Have My Money" dance videos, and be like, I'm trying to be able to do that.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome.
No, it's honestly what it was is it's not even full dance videos. Two things. It was seeing Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura do their dance off things because they're like pudgy guys in their late 40s and like they both can dance to some extent. And I was like, I wish I could do that. Not because I'm impressed by it as much as I think it's hilarious. And then it's that I've been spending so much time trying to understand TikTok is that I see these kids do these like short dances on TikTok and they're like, I don't have the, like, I know that I can't do it. And there's something about that, that like, I envy their talent. And when we get off this, I'm going to send you a video, but I posted it on Twitter yesterday, but there's this kid that does this dance to the Panini remix. It's DaBaby's versus Panini. He's in Walmart, but he's just like this pudgy white kid who you would think nothing of, who does like this ridiculous short, largely hands focused dance. And the TikTok I'll send you, it has like somebody watching it, reacting to it in real time. It's these two guys who are very, who just are like lose their minds because it's so good. But I showed it to B and she loved it, and she sent it to some people, and the whole time I was like, why can't we do that? Like, why can't I dance like that? And she was like, I don't know, I can't dance like that. And I was like, we should,
you know what,
find hip hop classes and take them. So I found one right before you and I hopped on this. There is a hip hop dance studio in Grand Rapids, and I think this week we are going to go and do a drop-in class and see if we can figure this out.
That's awesome. You know what? I think I'm adding something to the goals.
Just a couple classes. Just a couple classes.
Well, I have this, you know, I have a, like, you know, as you know, I'm just endlessly like thinking and spitting out ideas, like creative ideas for, you know, relative to the band or whatnot. And one of them centers around like sort of like a dance routine and like taking it very, very seriously. But the execution is serious, but the concept of sort of like a video behind it is very not necessarily serious. Basically the idea is like, I along with several children, like learn, like, and a choreographer, like design, learn and execute a dance routine to a yet to be written or recorded song, but like spending time actually like learning to do it well in a non-ironic sense, you know, kind of like the last scene of the last season of It's Always Sunny, where Mac does that like just like deeply impressive like interpretive dance scene, and you know, you're just kind of like, this is sort of silly and just like the context of the whole show, but this is a very serious, like, it's done with serious execution. And I was like, that's really, you know, that's really impressive. That seems like a cool thing to do. That's been a secret desire of mine for a very long time.
Yeah. And I've realized that, like, it's also for me, it's like, it's a good excuse to get some extra, like, it's sweat equity, right? Like there's
movement.
A lot.
Yeah.
There's just a lot. And plus, you know, with B, for people listening that don't know my life, her name is B has a real name. It's Brittany. With her doing yoga teacher training for the last few months, I have been her sole pupil and she has to log like a ridiculous amount of teaching hours. So I have been doing the same, wildly difficult yoga class over and over and over and over and over again. And the more I do it and the more limber I get, I'm like, I want to use this for some, like, you know what? There's a comedian, I can't remember who it is. Maybe it's a Pete Holmes joke. He has a joke about watching somebody kick somebody and how when he tries to kick, his leg only goes up like not far. there's a move in this yoga routine where you have to like put your arms up and kick out. And when we started, I still hate it. I hate how low my legs are. I hate that I can't kick. Watching all these videos, I was like, I could learn to do some of this stuff, especially after seeing Bert. If I could just do Bert's dance to that Post Malone song, which isn't even like, doesn't seem that technically difficult, I would be like so happy to have that ability, just that movement and the ability to move to the beat. And also, I feel like it's a great dumb, I don't party, but like trick in public when you're out with people and like some obnoxious song starts playing and like just the ability to just do that. To just make people be like, oh, you can dance? Like, there's nothing funnier and more impressive to me than, like, an average white guy that can dance decent. That's, like, that guy that went viral for his Post Malone video that's, like, bald with the giant beard in his 40s. Like, he just takes dance classes, and he just learned how to do that.
Yeah.
And now he's in a Post Malone video. I aspire to be mediocre at dancing.
I think a lot of dancing comes down to... like if you have a sense of, you need a sense of rhythm and, you know, other than that. But I think a lot of it comes down to committing to it. Just like fully not hedging your bets on it. Sort of not like, cause you have to let go of the notion of like being bad, like worrying about looking bad about it.
Yeah.
Sense. And then there's all kinds of other stuff like the expression of it, you know, and sort of like you getting physical with your body is very vulnerable, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, part of B's specialty in her yoga training is trauma sensitive yoga training. So I've become well versed in like movements that you don't do because you're trying to be trauma sensitive, and also like how you talk about your body in a way that's trauma sensitive. And yep. I like the idea of hip hop dancing because not because it's not trauma sensitive necessarily, because there is this just like ownership of your figure, no matter who you are, that I just like, yep. I don't possess looking in the mirror now. And I'm like, if I could dance though, at least I would know that I could do that thing.
Yeah. Well, mirrors are generally, I generally think mirrors are bad. They're bad. you know, we have them in our, yeah, our ability to examine our physical self. Like, I think if we had done, mirrors came before in Western society, like psychological reflection. And I think that was to deleterious effect. Like if we had learned to like inwardly look inwardly first, then sort of like looking at our physical reflection would have been, you know, sort of like, we can be in the world, but not of the world, if that makes sense. We're not attached to it. I think we got attached to the physical reflection before we balanced out sort of the non-physical reflection. But yeah, like it's, yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah. That's so funny that, we've both had that thought clearly for some time.
Yeah, and absolutely. Have
not expressed it out loud.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, if I'm home alone and I watch, I mean, I don't like to give away how much time I spend watching TikToks for, like, what I claim to be educational purposes.
Research.
Yeah, research and understanding how the platform works. I, like, become obsessed. There's a lot of, like, dance trends that happen. And recently there is one that's, I don't even know what the song is. I think it's just a soundbite where people list off like 15 dance moves in a way that's like, it sounds like rhythmically. So it's like, I've been pop, lock, and walk, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like just a whole bunch of dance moves that all kind of flow in together and rhyme. And to watch these kids do this dance, it's like, there's nothing more infuriating to me than seeing like a very small young person do something that your adult brain is just like, I don't understand. What is this? Like, it makes me feel old.
Yeah.
Like our mutual acquaintance, Jack Appleby, tweeted something yesterday where he was like, my parents have Instagram and they watch it, but they don't post anything, which is a sign to me that they're old, but I have TikTok and I watch it every day and I never post. And I was like, I do. That's me in a nutshell. I just watch it and I'm like, I don't know how to do these things.
Yeah.
And I want to. So this year, hopefully B will stick with it with me. But even if not, if she doesn't, it will give me the opportunity to do something really stupid in our household to impress her one day.
Yeah.
Because it's the hardest part about not being good at dancing and having a significant other and expressing your desire to learn to dance with them is that they give you a look that only reaffirms your knowledge of how not suited to be a dancer that you currently are. Because like, I was like, I was talking to her about it and I was just like, I showed her this video yesterday and I'd mentioned it to her before when we watched some other video, but I showed her this kid dancing that I'll send you. And I was just like, why can't I want to be able to do that. And she was like, do you think you can, like, why? You know, it's just like, it's so outside of character. And I benefit from being with somebody who's trying to learn how to do ecstatic dance, which is like a form of mindfulness practice where you just flow with them. Like, it's so hippie to me when she explains it to me. It's like, you just flow with the music. Like, it's just a bunch of people in a room as individuals letting their bodies move however the music moves them for like an hour, and it's therapeutic and it's confident building. And I was like, I want to do that, but I want to do it like, I want to do a dance. Like I showed her Kevin Hart and his daughter just danced to a different song by DaBaby for his song Bop. There was like a specific dance you do to it. And I showed it to her and I was like, we should do this. And she's like, that's not ecstatic dance. And I was like, I don't care. I want to be able to do this dance confidently. And just like, she's like, why? And I was like, I don't know. It's just,
well, being able to like, being able to, you know, so, In the fact that, like, you know, you enjoy, like, wordplay, like, you have a confidence in sort of, like, playing with linguistics, like, dance is a sort of a physicalization of that. Like, you're, you know, able to manipulate and play with your body in a way that, I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily use the word surprising, but, you know, it's sort of the same thing, you know, like, you're good at moving, basically. Ecstatic dancing is seems kind of like you see like videos of Woodstock back in the day, and people would just kind of be like throwing themselves around and having a good time. That seems like that. It's like rhythmic, but not less organized. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, which is a good old time. So it is hippie-ish in a way, but only in the sense that like that's our reference point for it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Because I do think that it stems from like my confidence with words and writing and talking to people. And I just want to have, it's like, it's almost like part of my brain feels like you only get to be one or two of things. Like everyone I know that is like super confident in their body physique and their like regimen and stuff would tell you that they hate wordplay. Or they like they're just not as good as words. Or somebody that's like really like B is really good at numbers, and I have to help her with all of her word stuff, and she helps me with all of her number stuff. Like you get one thing, and I've given up on numbers, so I'm going with like body confidence and wordplay just to get two of my three.
Well, I think you know anytime like there's value in having range. You know, there's a there's a book about it I'm listening to right now called Range by. I'm not going to try the name because it's wrong. And then that's going to seem vaguely not anti-Semitic, but I don't want to say the wrong Jewish sounding name, if that makes sense. You know, you don't want to be like, yeah, Sammy Goldberg. And it's like Dave Epstein, you know, like it's it's a little too dismissive. But the book's called Range. It's just about how, you know, there's a lot of value in having it in a hyper-specialized world. So some people that are like extremely confident or in their sort of physical prowess or their body or their health or whatever, you know, they've neglected other parts of, you know, they've specialized in that. And so they don't have confidence in other things, if that makes sense. But there's, you know, there's health in having range and sort of in dabbling in things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
I might fail, but it's fine. I'm okay with it as long as I learn to do one or two dumb dances that I can then break out at weddings for the rest of my life. Plus,
you're not failing as long as you're learning.
Plus, there's I always want a cinematic. I always love cinematic moments in life. And to me, like if you just go to a wedding, there's always like, there are dances that everyone knows how to do because of the songs that like call them out. But like, the dream of like being at a wedding and a song comes on that you happen to just know a dance to. And then for like those 3 minutes, people are like, who knew that he could do that thing?
Yeah.
Like, I know that that's 100% like ego outside approval type thing. But like, all I want in life is to like make someone be impressed by the fact I know how to dance.
Like, yeah.
Cause I don't find we live in a society where like good wordplay is increasingly not that interesting. Cause there's a lot of people who have a lot of voices that are very good at wordplay. And I still take pride in it, but now I'm like, yeah, but imagine if they're like, he can also dance. You would disagree?
I would disagree. Oh. Yeah, I would say that more and more people are getting okay at stuff.
Yeah, well, Chris Delia has that great joke that's like, we all get like 4 or 5 things that we're good at, and everything else we'll do for an hour and be like, screw it, I'm hungry. Like it's one of his best observations, but it's very true.
And that's okay. Yeah, we're not all supposed to be great at everything. I would say that, you know, Pete, like media, it's getting easier and easier to get to an acceptable level of performance or execution, if that makes sense, because the information and the time to do it is there. But I think like being good at something, you know, there are diminishing returns just universally. It's just that, you know, there are sort of helps. There are technological advances that are making it easier to be acceptable or at least okay, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's this idea that, like, the first guy that broke the 4-minute mile, if I'm remembering, I think that was the sort of the groundbreaker, the 4-minute mile. You know, he was the only one to do it. And then sort of suddenly afterwards, like lots of people have started to do it. And now like, it's almost like just, you know, as far as like being a competent professional runner, like lots of people do it, but lots of people in the sort of respective at my wife has entered the room. Christine is here and I now have a live fact checker.
Hi, Mrs. But she can't hear me.
James says hello. But there's this idea that the same guy that wrote Range, he writes a lot about sort of sports and like, are we getting better? Is the technology getting better? So like our shoes are better at sort of reacting to, you know, surfaces. The surfaces that we're running on are friendlier. Like when this guy ran, the first guy ran the 4-minute mile, he was running in the equivalent of ballet slippers on clay. Whereas now, you know, we have these $100, $200, $300 pieces of technology on our feet. We're running on rubberized surfaces. You know, just recently, the guy that broke that 2-hour marathon, he was running in shoes that Nike designed that now are banned by the International Olympic Committee because they provide the technology in them provides an enough of a statistical difference that creates an unfair advantage in the on the playing field. So yeah, I think the technology has democratized a lot, but there is still, you know, there's a lot more people that are okay at stuff now, but that's like that sort of level of like elite performance or being really good at something is still there, but it, you know, it then gets washed away. It can, there's potential for it to be washed away by all the middling that exists.
Yeah. And then there's like, there are also like just the niche areas of things like comedy is a good example. We always talk about that there are like theater comics and there are arena comics and there are club comics and you can't like comparing the skill sets. You can be the best club comic in the world and just not work in a theater. It's just like, so there's also that whole factor to the whole thing that I, at least as a writer myself, I try to keep in mind where it's like, listen, I'm not going to write as good as, you know, this person that's writing a feature on like the Australian wildfires. And I'm like, listen to this new movie with dick and fart jokes that I think are funny. You know what I mean? It's just not, like, we're not doing the same thing. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I don't believe that like I work necessarily as well. Like if you put me in a, I don't enjoy the experience of playing on a really elevated stage in front of 1,000 people as much as I do being in just like a crammed, you know, 300 to 700 cap room where I'm like maybe a head or two above people. Like, you know, yes. Like it's just not, the experience isn't the same for me. It doesn't bring me to that same place of like, losing my sense of self. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do for me, you know, the same thing. There's too much of a separation between me as like a look, I'm me up here and you're down there.
Yeah. No, totally makes sense. I actually got to see that firsthand recently to bring it back to the band.
Yeah.
Remember? You played a show.
Yeah, I played a show and then someone came to the show sick and then they gave me that sick. It was a nice gift. So I had to cancel the second one, but we've rescheduled that, and in about a month we're going to announce a makeup show for that along with a couple other interesting shows that are coming up. But I'm getting the signal from the wife and my stomach. That it's
dang, she just sold you out.
That is, I'm not blaming anybody.
We've been doing it for a while. It's fine, Christy.
We get, you know, you're not going to be a stranger to this by any means. So we can dig further into your,
I'm glad I could be one into of your existence.
I'm happy that, you know, especially after all my flaking with Not Quite and sort of being in a really rough headspace for the last like 2 years that you're down to clown, I guess.
Well, I hope this satisfies all the people who are like, you guys should keep doing Not Quite, which is kind of an insult to the guy who has maintained another podcast this whole time. It's like when you're in a band and it breaks up and then you start a side project and everyone's like, when is that other band getting back together? It's like, dude, I have another thing that I do. And they're like, I know, like Ben's not on that show. And I'm like, oh, well, cool. Well,
you know, I'm a weird guy. I guess people, you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's listen, last night I watched an episode of The Simpsons where Cheech and Chong get into a fight and they break up and Homer works with Cheech and Principal Skinner works with Chong and they call it Teach and Chong. And and it just doesn't work as well. So that's how I try to frame it in my mind where it's like, oh, okay, one of us is he's the Chong and I'm the Cheech, and I'm just like, people are like, I don't care about Cheech Marin when Tommy isn't around. It's like, all right, that makes sense.
Well, the problem with Cheech is he just like, he became like a pretty straight-laced dude. He's like, all right, I'm gonna wear suits and I'm gonna be on Nash Bridges.
Yeah, he was like, I'm gonna be a real actor, and Tommy Chong was like, I'm just gonna keep being Tommy Chong.
And, I'm just gonna keep being high, man.
Yeah, you're like, I'm just gonna keep being Ben Leapsch, and they're like, you need Ben. And I was like, all right, well, here we go. Everyone that keeps asking us to do more not quites, we'll do them here.
We're here. Yeah. Cool. Is there anything you wanted to like
plug?
You know, sort of plug as we're wrapping into this, you know, wrapping the end of this. What you got going on?
I got plugs. Well, I do have another podcast. It's called Inside Music, and if you're listening to this podcast somewhere, then you can find it there too. I have a YouTube channel. It's called Music Biz. I have a day job. It's called Holics, and the blog is Holics Daily. That's where I write. And then I have a Substack newsletter that I haven't actually started yet, but you can sign up for if you go to jamesshotwell.substack.com. And
it'll be in the show notes.
Yep, I'm on Twitter, the James D. Shotwell. Not the just at James D. Shotwell. And other things I guess we can't talk about yet. But I'm going to LA in a week. I don't know when this comes out. So if you're in LA, I will be out there. And then I think that's it. I travel a lot. You can find me and Ben together several times throughout the year, I'm sure. So, you know, reach out. Come see us.
Yeah, keep an eye out, Grand Rapids.
One day we'll go on tour together and we'll just do dumb shit in every city together.
It's all dumb shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but we'll do it. We'll do it for an audience of people.
Yeah, we just hope you enjoy it.
All right.
Nice. The other day I was like, one quick thing. The other day, I mean, this morning I was like, my brain's like, all right, when did Marc Maron start his podcast and what was the state of his career at the time?
Not great.
Like, okay. He was 45. And I'm like, all right, I'm starting 10 years ahead of schedule.
Okay. Yeah. You aren't quite as angry as he was, so we're good.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, very true.
But tomorrow he has Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio on, so you should probably take a couple of days to get this out.
Yeah, yeah.
I do the same thing where it's like, again, he's not in our league, but in my brain I'm like, oh, Marin's got a good guest this week. I should probably wait to drop my episode. Everyone's going to be like, always to Marin.
Yeah, I'm always, you know, when I was younger and like touring full time, everybody was always impressing upon me how like my age mattered. So I'd be like, all right, how old was this person when they succeeded, or how old was this person? And I'd use that as a reference. And now I'm in my, you know, I'm 35 and I'm like, yeah, none of that shit matters. Like, it just doesn't. Like, as long as you keep making music that's just not for 17-year-olds, then you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a tweet. I saw a very popular tweet this morning that said, I don't even remember who the artist was. It was like, this artist is one of the only people to ever do the impossible, which is write a good song after the age of 24. And I was like, none of my favorite songwriters are 24 years old. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, I do agree that I wrote some of my best stuff when I was young, but I just think it's because I didn't think about it as much as I do now. That's a different problem. That's a different episode of conversations.
Again, one of my other resolutions this year is to go to get more Kenny Beats about it, and to don't overthink shit quite as much.
Oh my god, yes.
As far as creative execution,
I would like it if you started your own version of The Cave that was just you working on songs.
That would be it'd be so unproductive.
That, so one last plug, everyone go to YouTube and watch The Cave with Kenny Beats.
I don't know if they need the help, but
no. I mean, they might. The Zach Fox episode is the best one, but they're all good.
They are very good.
All right, man, you go spend time with your wife and watch the video I just texted you, and everyone else, maybe Ben will include it in his show notes how to find that video. I'll tweet it or something. So
we'll talk soon.
Thanks for letting me on. I'm sure you'll text me in like 30 seconds. So
bye-bye.
Bye.